As I sat reading through my notes last night, at the point when it was too late to do anything about it, it finally dawned on me that I had possibly been a tad ambitious in the choice of theme for today's service, which, for the benefit of visitors, is the first one I've ever done. So bear with me, please. So for better or worse, today I'm going to be talking about walking the talk. I suppose it would be a good idea at this stage to clarify precisely what this means, just in case there's anyone in the room that's not familiar with the phrase. If someone said to walk the talk, it means their actions match their words, they do what they say they're going to do, and they put their professed beliefs and values into action in their everyday lives. It's a bit like practicing what you preach. So I like to imagine that walking the talk is something that all of us here today would aspire to, as far as is humanly possible anyway. First things first though, as individuals and as a liberal religious community gathered here today, what is our talk? What is it that we say that we do? What are our shared values? I realise it is potentially quite a dangerous thing to do, to try and make any form of generalisation about a bunch of Unitarians, but I'm going to stick my neck out and try and do it anyway. I've got some evidence. At the very least, the very, very least, I think we share some simple, humane values. There's evidence of this in the words that members of this congregation speak each year in our annual membership service. This is one of the lines. With caring and open hearts, we pledge to join in making our community an inclusive and welcoming place for all people of goodwill. This affirmation is mainly about the way we behave with each other within these walls, and most of the time I think we make a pretty good job of living up to those words. If you were to read our church leaflet or the website, you will find a whole list of things that we say that we do and that we claim that we stand for. But for the purposes of today's service, there's one that particularly caught my attention. We challenge one another to lead ethically responsible lives of conscience and compassion. Now, that's a somewhat bolder claim. It starts to relate what we do here on a Sunday morning to what we do out in the real world the other 6.5 days of the week. Our lovely minister, Sarah Tinker, carried out a study of this congregation last year, and a very large number of us filled in questionnaires for it about what our values are, what our beliefs are. And she wrote it up for an MA dissertation, which incidentally is on our website now, and I highly recommend you all read it. In describing this very community, this is what she said. There is a morality, an ethic of right living, in relationship to one another, to all of existence, and to our planet Earth. People here try to care and don't necessarily require an external sense of a deity in order to remember, to care, and to love. Now, I really like the simplicity of this notion of right living. And of course, I only mean it's simple to say, not it's simple to do. Fellow Unitarian Peter Hawkins, on the front of your order of service today, beautifully summarises what right living might mean for our everyday lives. In part, he says, I need to address and readdress the question, how can I be and do in the world in a way that creates less harm and does more good? I think this is so important. And I suppose I should interrupt myself here to say, at any point in the rest of this service where I use the phrase right living, if I say something is right, if I say doing the right thing, can you all imagine little quotation marks around right? A working definition of the right thing is that quotation for me, being and doing in a way that creates less harm and does more good. I know there's a lot of ambiguities left in that, but let's work with that definition for today. So this ethic of right living is what I'm going to focus on for the rest of the sermon. In our first reading, we heard about great lives of spiritual integrity. Now, it's good to take inspiration from the exceptional lives of the likes of heroes, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and many others. But at the same time, we need to remember that in our own considerably less spectacular way, most of the time, every single one of us has got a vital part to play in making the world more just, habitable and humane. So how do we all go about the process of walking the talk of right living day to day? Well, having a clear sense of our values is a very good start, I would say. But life is so very complex, and every little thing we do or don't do has consequences and repercussions we can hardly begin to imagine. I found a really nice example online by a UU minister called Eva Cameron. She tried to do a very simple good deed and ended up tying herself in knots entirely. So this is what she said. I make a tray of chocolate brownies for a neighbour who's just come home from hospital. I make them in a disposable tray because I don't want to leave her any washing up to do while she's recovering. But then maybe I should have forgotten about the brownies altogether if it means creating extra waste, which is bad for the environment. Then she is very happy to see me and we have a good time visiting. While I'm there, she tells me that her medical condition is in part caused by her weight problem. Perhaps I shouldn't have made those brownies at all because they'll contribute to her dietary problems and they may even get her into a downward sugar cycle. But then she told me that she really loves chocolate and the brownies taste just like her mother used to make. Then I think about how my mother would have loved some brownies and she only lives across town. I could go on and on like this. The consequences of using non-organic flour, non-fair trade chocolate and so forth. We live in a constant battle between positive and negative forces, and many of our actions can create ripples we scarcely understand. So if the simple act of taking a tray of cakes next door is such a moral minefield, we can see that rigorously applying the ethic of right living to the rest of our lives is going to be hugely challenging, and I don't think that's going to come as a surprise to anyone here today. However, the sheer complexity of life is only one of the factors that makes right living so hard to do. Sometimes in our lives, the right thing to do is pretty clear, but that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to do it. Due to habit, comfort, convenience, or sheer lack of energy and hours in the day, we might not manage to do what on some level we know is the right thing. It's very easy to give you umpteen illustrations of this because I notice myself doing it many times each day. The very first example off the top of my head is this. I am not that good at recycling. The shameful truth is, and I will confess to this in public, I have never recycled a printer cartridge and I use a lot of them. I groan at myself each time I throw one in the bin because I know what I ought to be doing, but for some reason or another that I can't fathom, I just haven't got my act together to do the right thing. And that's just one example. So, life is complex, it's difficult to know what's right, and even when we know what's right, it's not always within our means to do it. Another factor that makes it hard to live up to this ideal of right living is our inevitably limited capacity for self-awareness. From time to time, we might act in a way that directly causes harm to others without the slightest inkling that we're doing so. I think we probably all have blind spots, habitual behaviours which are hurtful to others and about which we're totally unaware. Another example from my own life. I personally aspire to be gentle in my own speech and careful in my own listening. It's a really important value for me and an expression of right living. I intend to avoid harshness, mockery and severe judgment of others. And yet each day I notice myself doing things that are entirely out of line with these high ideals. And I wonder how many more times each day I didn't notice when I've been casually rude, dismissive or inattentive. Completely unaware. Of course, if we go down the road of putting ourselves under such intense scrutiny, there's a risk we'll end up so despondent about all our failings and the things that are beyond our power to do that we might just give up and stop trying altogether. Or we might go into overdrive and make ourselves quite ill trying to do it all. When we find ourselves in a tangle like this, not knowing what to do for the best, one approach is to try and see the bigger picture, the God's eye view, as we heard in the reading earlier. This change of perspective can help us get a sense of where we fit in the greater scheme of things and nudge us back into balance. On the one hand, taking the larger view, we can see the interconnectedness of all people, all creatures, the planet, the cosmos. This might lead us to greater awareness of the ways in which our actions impact on others. It might spur us on to be more mindful and responsible in our words and deeds. On the other hand, taking the larger view, we can see that each of us human beings has got limited resources of time and energy. We can't be personally, individually responsible for healing the world single-handed, and beating ourselves up about our shortcomings is not going to do anybody any good. Creating less harm definitely includes being compassionate towards ourselves. Having said all that, it still seems to me that the ideal of right living is a worthy aim and a principle upon which to orient our lives. It's useful to ask ourselves over and over again, how can I create less harm and do more good? So to conclude, if we're serious about walking the talk of right living, there are a few things that might help us make a go of it. Firstly, it seems important to have a clear sense of your own values, the specific principles you want to live by. You've got to know what your talk is before you can hope to walk it. Secondly, we all need ways to remind ourselves and keep reminding ourselves over and over again of these values and principles, because it is so easy to lose touch with them in our demanding lives. Each of us has got to find our own way of doing this, but maybe a regular spiritual practice of some sort, prayer or meditation, can help to nudge us away from the preoccupations of the material world and back towards awareness of the bigger picture or the God's eye view. And finally, I reckon it really helps to be part of a spiritual community like this one. It's very hard to live up to these high ideals, but luckily we don't have to do it alone. Here at Essex Church, like it says on the leaflet, we can support and challenge each other to live lives of conscience and compassion. Because ultimately we're all in it together. Amen.